from.
Thank you very much. Well, welcome to the 2007 NKS conference. It's nice to see both familiar faces and new faces here today. Well, I'm certainly really looking forward to this weekend. I think we're going to have both some very interesting formal presentations and lots of opportunity for informal interaction. I mean, it's kind of a nice feature of still having such a comparatively small group here. There's an opportunity to sort of complete mixing across the very diverse backgrounds and interests of everyone here. Well, as of May 14th this year, it's 5 years since I published the NKS book, and I said in the book that I expected it would take many decades for NKS to develop. But I'm happy to say that I think right now we're in many ways ahead of the curve that I expected. I mean, it's sort of a great time in the history of NKS. Things are just starting to gel in some wonderful ways. I want to do two things here today. I want to talk a bit about how I see NKS now, sort of 5 years out, and I want to talk about the future, where I see NKS going, both in terms of content and in terms of its place in the world and its organization. So let's start by talking about NKS and what it's about. I spent 10 years working very hard on the NKS book, and I intended it to be a long-term book. And I'm happy to say that 5 years out, I think there's nothing significant that I would change about it. But I've been thinking about the core ideas of NKS for a little more than 25 years now, and somehow every year they sink in a little bit more, and I get to understand a little bit more about what their significance is. When I started working on NKS, I really started from sort of a traditional scientific paradigm of trying to find formal models for the natural world. And what I realized was that there was sort of a vast expansion of those models that could be made, going beyond sort of the three centuries of traditional mathematics and looking instead at the more general kinds of models that can be represented by programs. But increasingly, I've realized that it's sort of that computational universe of possible programs that's ultimately the most important thing. Yes, the programs can be used as models, and that's an important application. But ultimately, the most important intellectual contribution of NKS is really to recognize the importance of exploring the abstract computational universe of possible programs. It's what I call pure NKS, the sort of basic science of the computational universe. It's a science that I suppose could have been started 1,000 years ago or more, because really all it's about is sort of following definite rules, the way artisans have sort of throughout the ages followed rules to create visual forms, or people have followed rules to play games, do calculations, whatever else. And indeed, sort of dotted through history are a wonderful sequence of instances where some of the key ideas of NKS were almost discovered. For various reasons, they were missed, most often mainly because they clashed with sort of the reigning paradigms of the times. I consider myself very fortunate to have come upon NKS, and it happened through a sort of curious confluence of circumstances that began in the late 1970s. I mean, as a physicist, I'm sort of used to seeking fundamental explanations for things, and as a creator of software systems, I was used to sort of the idea of computational systems. But it still took some years before I put these together and did the sort of key computer experiments that sort of launched me in the direction of NKS. Well, my first experiments, as probably most of you know, involved these systems called cellular automata. And when I actually did those experiments, I was printing out images of cellular automata behavior on a line printer. For many of the younger folks here, that's one of those things with big sheets of paper that probably you've never seen. But just to sort of tweak history a bit, here's sort of what I would have liked to be doing in my very first experiment. This is sort of, for that time, an artifact from the future. This is sort of our latest mathematical technology. So this is just running the simplest kind of cellular automaton with rules represented by those little icons at the bottom there. As I move this slider here, the rule changes. Sometimes the results are really simple, like this. That we're sort of getting what we would expect. We have a really simple rule at the bottom there, and we're getting really simple behavior out. But we can already see that there's lots of diversity in what happens here. What's sort of I What's really most remarkable is that even among these very simplest possible rules, there are examples that show amazingly complex behavior. So my all-time favorite is rule number 30. Here it is. And we can, let's go ahead and make this. And we can look at what happens to rule 30 as we go for more and more steps. And sort of, this is something I first saw in 1984, and I thought it was important then, but it still took me years to kind of realize just how important this phenomenon actually is. I think it's still sort of sinking in even now. Well, back in the early 1980s, I studied cellular automata a lot, and I figured out some things I thought were pretty interesting. And I realized that phenomena like sort of complexity really were basic things that could be studied kind of independent of the details of the systems in which they occur. Well, that just made me more interested in really drilling down to find the basic science underneath what I was seeing. I knew I needed better tools to do that. That's one of the main reasons that I built Mathematica, to sort of have my telescope to explore the computational universe. Well, that worked out better than I could possibly have imagined. And when I turned Mathematica out into the computational universe, I just sort of started seeing all this amazing stuff. I mean, I'm a big sort of history, a student of the history of science, and somehow from my experience with Mathematica, I've begun to think that I can sort of tell what it must have felt like for Galileo at home when he first sort of turned the telescope to the sky and immediately started seeing things like mountains on the moon or satellites of Jupiter. Of course, the things Galileo saw were what, in a sense, launched the course of mathematical science that has dominated our directions in science for 300 years. Only time will tell, but to me there seems to be a certain sort of inevitability to the fact that the things we're doing with MKS will similarly define a new course for science of something like the same magnitude. In a sense, just like in the development of traditional science, some of the most important steps are methodological and technological, which is part of why I've spent so much of my time developing tools. Actually, in the past couple of years, I've been quite submerged in tool building. And I'm happy to say that as of the beginning of May, just before the fifth anniversary of MKS, we finally finished a major milestone in tool development. And for 10 years, we've been working on kind of a reinvention of Mathematica, made possible by some major new ideas, as well as by the increasing general power of computers. Well, we finally finished the new Mathematica, and it's the same kind of excitement as with the very first version of Mathematica back in 1988, it's suddenly sort of possible to do all these new things for all sorts of purposes. One of the notable directions that we can go with the new Mathematica is for MKS, for exploring the computational universe. It's sort of too early to say what will come from it. I mean, the first version of Mathematica let us take some sort of major steps in feeling out what happens in the computational universe. I think with our reinvention of Mathematica, we can get, in a sense, even closer to the computational universe, being able to explore it in a sort of truly interactive and dynamic way, kind of feeling computational processes closer at hand. Well, so there's a vast universe of possible programs out there to explore in the computational universe. It's a basic science to be built from studying them, a science like a physics or a chemistry, but concerned with the computational universe. We know some of the core principles of that science, overall classifications of behavior, concepts like computational irreducibility, broad principles like the principle of computational equivalence. But there are many, many details and specifics to fill in. I mean, it's kind of like the early days of something like chemistry. We know some of the common compounds, but there are zillions out there to study with all sorts of special and interesting properties. That's just like the early days of natural history or biology. We know some of the species that inhabit the Earth, but there are vastly more to find with all their bizarre, special, kind of wondrous features. One thing that's been exciting recently is a steady increase in the amount of pure MKS being done in the studies of simple programs out in the computational universe that we see. It's not yet a full torrent, but it's certainly more than a trickle. The torrent will come, thousands of PhD theses studying particular systems, exploring, characterizing, documenting what's out there in the computational universe. That's one thing that's always great about fundamentally new directions in science. They define not only new methods, but provide a new framework that shows why some whole new direction of investigation is interesting. I think perhaps the thing I'm most excited about right now, when it comes to the computational universe, though, is in mining it. I mean, looking at all those programs out there and finding ones that are useful for different purposes. It's a little bit like what happened over the past many thousands of years with physical materials. I mean, out in the natural world, there are all these different materials. Iron ore, amber, diamond, silicon, sugarcane, liquid crystals. Over the course of time, we've learned how to make use of those things for our technology, our science, our art, and so on. Well, so it will be with the computational universe. I mean, over the course of time, we'll figure out how to make use of all those programs out there. In a sense, my original motivation about modeling the natural world was only a tiny slice. We've already found lots of programs that are really useful in our efforts to model all sorts of aspects of the natural world. But there's so much more that we can do with simple programs. I mean, creating things as well as just understanding and reproducing what's sort of already out there in nature. Now, of course, there's still plenty to do in using simple programs to make models of nature. I mean, every year, some more systems get modeled with simple programs. And the rate has definitely been increasing substantially in recent years. I think the most important point is just realizing that it's possible for simple programs, simple rules, to be good models of complex processes. In a sense, that's just a consequence of one of the earliest basic MKS facts, that even very simple programs out in the computational universe can show rich and complex behavior. There are many other things going on, though, too. I mean, like the fact that it's becoming possible to get much more detailed data on things. I mean, not just measuring one or two numbers, but getting images, outputs from whole arrays of sensors and things. Well, then there's sort of no escaping the complexity of behavior in systems. Now, sometimes there's a traditional mathematical model for a system, often some complicated partial differential equation or something, but when the behavior is complex, it's incredibly hard to work with those kinds of models, even to do the numerical analysis and things to find out if one's getting the right answer. In fact, in systems with complex behavior, I think there's usually computational irreducibility at work that makes it sort of inevitable that one's going to have to do irreducible computational work to find out how the system will behave. And that puts a lot of pressure on having the simplest possible underlying model, so one has sort of the best chance to run it for the longest time. Well, finding models is always hard, especially simple ones, where one doesn't get to tweak parameters to fit every new piece of data that one sees. But I think there's been a definite trend in seeing more and more NKS-based simple programs being used for models. Lots of cellular automata, some mobile automata, some string and substitution systems, more and more network-based systems. There's still a certain tendency toward model engineering, though. I mean, starting from the phenomena one's trying to model and using essentially traditional engineering methods to, in a sense, build up the model. Well, NKS suggests another sort of bizarre way to find models, which is just to search for them. Of course, with traditional complicated models, that would be completely crazy. But if the models one's using are simple enough, well, then it becomes conceivable to just find them by searching. Define what general properties one wants the model to have, and then just search for the model by exhaustively going through possibilities. There have been some nice successes of this kind of approach. A few of them were already in the NKS book. Not only in modeling systems in physics and biology and so on, and in some other, but also in some other kinds of areas, like, for example, finding the simplest axiomatic models for logic or in algebra. But we're still only in the early days of search-based modeling. In a sense, from what we've done in studying the basic science of the computational universe and its principles, we're developing the analog of something like calculus, which lets us set up models and work out their consequences. But now we have to do sort of the inverse, develop methodologies for going from phenomena to models. With sort of calculus-based models, we have traditional methods of statistics that do some of this, albeit rather weakly. But with NKS, we need a new methodology whose sort of core is some kind of automated search in the computational universe. It's been very interesting in the last few years. There have been more and more sort of case studies of this kind of NKS-based searching, gradually more and more methods being found. Though I have to say that for basic NKS purposes, exhaustive search on good computers still looks awfully good. But one of the things I'm sure we'll see in the next few years is increasing systematization of NKS-based, search-based modeling. I'm guessing one of the big application areas will be biology, trying to figure out sort of appropriate models of processes in biology. It won't be long before we'll all know our complete genetic programs, but then we have to work out how these programs run, how development occurs, how the organism runs, and what bugs there can be, what diseases can happen, and how to fix them. We're beginning to get sort of oodles of data about all of this, And I think NKS is perhaps our best hope to really make sense of it all in a systematic way. I mean, a key moment in biology in the past was the realization that digital information lies at the foundation of the construction of biological systems. Now we have to understand how processes in biological systems work. And I think here the concept of simple programs will be what's crucial. I think there are lots of areas of biology where one's sort of inexorably moving towards simple programs, particularly when one sees kind of rampant diversity in biology. I mean, when I learned things about biology decades ago, one heard about, you know, one or two kinds of some type of cell or something. But now there are zillions of them, with new ones being found all the time, whether it's, you know, brain cells, immune system cells, and so on, often with their own very special different properties. They just don't seem like different parameter values. They seem like, in a sense, whole different species. Well, I think instead what's going on is just that we're seeing sort of a simple enumeration of programs, where the programs, just as a matter of sort of pure MKS, behave in very diverse and different ways. It'll be the same thing with diseases, I expect. There'll be that kind of diversity there, too. I think this stuff will play out in its most important way, probably, in biomedicine, but it'll have plenty of significance in other parts of biology, too. I mean, in Darwinian evolution, we're used to sort of searching for missing links that allow us to see how some parameters change from one thing to another and sort of interpolated in the fossil record. But as I think I've been known to say, when one thinks about those kinds of things, you know, who expected the Stegosaurus with all its funny spines and so on? But with NKS, we're understanding that the diverse forms of biology can represent sort of a uniform covering of abstract spaces of possible programs. We can kind of build a predictive biology that lets us understand the whole spectrum of forms. And potentially, for example, do a much better job in recognizing and cataloging them, as well as understanding how we can engineer them for particular purposes, not only for complete organisms, you know, weird designer fruit or whatever, but also for creative tissues and things for bioengineering. Well, when it comes to modeling, I suppose the biggest prize in natural science is to find a fundamental model of physics. Before NKS, the history of physics made it seem sort of increasingly unlikely that all the richness that we see in the universe could come from a really simple rule. But NKS makes it much less clear that that's the right conclusion. In fact, given NKS, I certainly can't give an argument for why our universe shouldn't all come from some very simple program. Perhaps a program simple enough that we can find it just by searching for it. Well, as many of you know, especially read chapter 9, to get a really simple model of the universe, I think it's inevitable that one has to go, in a sense, below space and time and everything familiar. Then things become quite abstract, quite difficult to deal with technically. But I must say that the more I do along these lines, the more confident I feel that our universe may well really sort of be out there, not too far out in the computational universe, possible universes. These days, networks are all the rage, so at least the idea of representing things in terms of networks doesn't seem quite as crazy as before. But if one looks at present-day physics, the NKS approach is still deeply alien. I mean, I used to think that as we made progress with the NKS approach, it looked less alien to physicists. And I think it looks increasingly likely that there are simple limits of the NKS approach that will give present-day things like string theory and so on. But on the current trajectory, I think it's sort of at least a decade of development for kind of the present-day physics world to reach the kinds of ideas that we need for the NKS approach. Which means that if we're following we're kind of following that approach on our own. We can't expect much help from all our friends who are physicists. It's sort of too alien to them. You know, it's kind of interesting also to see how NKS interacts with mathematics. In a sense, pure NKS is rather like pure mathematics. It's much concerned with studying abstract systems defined by rules, much like axioms. But there's a huge difference in practice, because mathematics has picked what it considers interesting very much on the basis of its history. Whereas NKS just sort of goes out into the computational universe and starts looking at systems, sort of enumerating all the possibilities. And what one finds that way out, sort of in the wild, is rather different from what one finds in the well-protected groves of traditional mathematics. There's lots of computational irreducibility, for example, leading to rampant undecidability. It's kind of weird. Mathematics has focused so much on solving long unsolved problems. But from what I've seen with NKS, unsolvability is sort of completely rampant. It's only rare and special cases where things are solvable. And that realization forces one to a whole sort of different perspective on mathematics, thinking much more about experiments, somehow imagining quite different forms of generalization, and realizing that mathematics is really part of the humanities, studying the sort of great artifact of our civilization, which is the current form of mathematics. So, okay, as NKS takes root, how does the future kind of look? I think one thing that will be a critical change is that more and more of what we see in the world, more of what we make, will come not from traditional methods of engineering, but instead from mining the computational universe. Today, we're used to building structures, machines, algorithms, by sort of explicitly designing them step by step. But what we learned from NKS is that that's not the best way to make use of our raw materials. Out there in the computational universe, there are vastly more efficient things to be found. Rules that let us achieve particular purposes much more efficiently and effectively than anything we would create by traditional engineering. Of course, when we see these things, they often look quite alien to us. They're not things we would ever come up with ourselves. They're peculiar devices sort of plucked from the computational universe. In the past, if we were confronted with two objects, one an artifact, one a natural system, it's usually been easy to tell which is the artifact. It's the one that looks simpler, the one that has recognizable elements whose operation we understand. When we pluck things from the computational universe, though, we're doing something a little more like nature, which is not under the constraint of having to come up with things that we can understand. But nature tends to use mechanisms like natural selection, and even natural selection is an important simplifying force. It can only really engage on features that are somehow simple. But when we search sort of arbitrarily in the computational universe, we're not relying on anything like that. So we get things that are, in a sense, more natural than nature. And we can operate, in a sense, in a cleverer way than nature. It's a sort of powerful idea, mining from the computational universe. We've actually used it for years in the construction of Mathematica. Some of our cleverest algorithms were not created by the clever humans who work at our company. Instead, they were sort of plucked from the computational universe, found by large-scale searches of spaces of possible programs. Sometimes their algorithms are very precise things, like sorting or multiplying numbers or evaluating mathematical functions. Sometimes, for in a sense, vaguer things, like generating random sequences or hashing or automating the aesthetics of graphics or producing good automated tests. When we construct algorithms ourselves, we tend to use schemes like iteration or recursion or something, but in a sense define a rather simple overall structure, repetitive or nested or whatever. But when we get algorithms from the computational universe, they look in a sense much more complicated, often in some respects random, though usually with some structure, albeit one whose operation we can't immediately understand. It's interesting sort of how the trade-offs for creating things change when one's mining the computational universe rather than doing traditional engineering. Traditional engineering puts a great premium on copying what one's done before, on reusing the same ideas of wheels and levers and half adders and whatever. But in mining the computational universe, creativity and coming up with new mechanisms is in a sense free. And what tends to make the most sense is not to start from the devices one's already built, but instead to take the sort of pure raw material that's available in some particular system and then to search the computational universe for ways to use it. Like take nanotechnology, where sort of the traditional approach is to take mechanisms we know work in our traditional engineering and try to shrink them down to molecular scales. Well, it's often rather difficult to make things like wheels out of molecules. But what the NKS approach says is that that's not what one needs to do. Instead, one can take whatever is easy to create with raw molecules and then just search the abstract computational universe for how to use that to achieve some particular functional purpose. Coming up with, quotes, engineering structures that look nothing like our traditional engineering structures. Same kind of thing applies to synthetic biology. I mean, given the raw material of proteins, one can expect to mine the computational universe for ways to use them to perform all sorts of important functions, perhaps in bizarrely different and more efficient ways than natural selection, for example, has ever found. There's so much that can be done by mining the computational universe, not only in technology, but also in areas like art and design. I mean, one of the features of the computational universe is that it's very big. There's a lot there. So if I want something new, it's easy to find that. It sort of changes the economics of production. It used to be that to find something new was very expensive. So it was much better to mass produce things all the same. But mining the computational universe changes that. We can discover unique things cheaply and easily. We did an experiment a couple of years ago along these lines with Wolfram Tones, which probably most of you have seen. Which had to do with mining the computational universe of simple cellular automata to find musical forms. So it's interesting to sort of reflect on what this project showed us. I mean, each time we press one of these buttons here, We, I don't know what the sound is, but that's always the case. That every time I actually press one of these buttons in public, I get something which I think sounds terrible. Well, perhaps we spare the sound on the tone. So each time we press one of these buttons, our computer goes out into the computational universe and finds some computational world governed by some particular set of rules. And then the computer plays us sort of the sounds of that world, the musical form created by following that set of rules. We might have thought that with simple rules, we'd always get simple, boring music. But one of the lessons of MKS is that we don't. Even among very simple programs, there's sort of immense richness of behavior, which we get to experience here as music. It's kind of striking. It's like sort of a Turing test for music. It's remarkably easy to find pleasing, inventive pieces of music out in the computational universe that we certainly could imagine were made by talented human effort. You know, one of the things that's emerged from studying the computational universe and from MKS is what I call the principle of computational equivalence. It's a strong, broad scientific principle, in a sense tells us that there's a broad equivalence in the kinds of computations that get done across a wide range of systems in the computational universe, in nature, and in particular in things like our brains. At the outset, it's a principle that seems hard to swallow, but things like the Wolfram Tones project somehow begin to ease us into it. I mean, as a member of the NKS community observed, once one sort of heard the music they make, cellular automata begin to seem a lot more like us. One's in a sense experiencing the principle of computational equivalence. Well, what happens with Wolfram Tones is something quite general to the production of different forms. Everyone knows one can make remarkable images using simple programs like cellular automata, but it's becoming more and more clear that one can make important structures that way too, for graphic design, industrial engineering, architecture, structures that in a sense always make sense because they're ultimately based on simple rules, but which build from those simple rules to a high level of complexity and richness. It's kind of a new aesthetic. Somehow there's an idea that when one brings sort of science into art, one must end up with sort of traditional modernism, with simple geometrical forms and so on. In a sense, that's what traditional science has been like, handling simple structures and simple processes, regular geometrical figures, simple circular motions, and so on. But MKS is not like that, nor is most of the computational universe. It's a much richer, much more interesting, much less cold thing. Often when we kind of deal with classicism, what ends up happening is that we just copy forms that have been used before, the design of some Greek temple or some floral ornament that's a literal copy of what we see in nature. But what MKS and the computational universe show us is that we can be much more creative. We can, in a sense, capture the essence of the beauty of nature and the regularities that we respond to, but in new ways. I mean, today, the things we build, whether they be buildings, websites, or manufactured goods, tend to repeat over and over again the same kinds of simple forms. But a few decades from now, I suspect one of the most obvious visible consequences of the spread of MKS is that our environment will look rather different. It'll be full of structures that were just sort of found in the computational universe. Interesting aesthetic forms, many with a kind of sort of comfortable familiarity of kind of classicism in nature, but in a sense, more logical, with more integrity, and with a whole diverse set of new inventive ideas. And of course, there'll be bizarre alien things that are quite different, sometimes jarringly so, sometimes in a sense showing us a form that we appreciate once we see it, yet it's refreshingly new. It's always interesting how our environment influences our ways of thinking. I mean, when there was clockwork, people thought about a clockwork universe. When there were computer programs, people only then could begin to think about programming the universe, so to speak. And in the future, when the world is full of MKS artifacts, whatever might seem alien today about the core concepts of MKS will begin to seem completely commonplace and expected. When one thinks about the computational universe and about the lessons of MKS, it's remarkable sort of how broadly they can be applied. I mean, I've often said that 50 years from now, perhaps it's by now 45, of all the new things being created in the world, especially in technology, there'll be more created by MKS methods from mining the computational universe than from all other traditional methods put together. If you pick any industry, almost any activity, I think there are fundamental changes that can happen as a result of MKS. I often have my favorites at any given time, like right now, one of my favorites is robotics, and particularly nanorobotics, where I think there's some really exciting things that can be done by creating modular robots, in a sense built from very simple identical elements, but operating according to rules kind of mined from the computational universe. another recent paper, it's Image Understanding, where I think we'll see, in a sense, populations of possible algorithms being created using NKS and able to detect different features of images. Still another area is linguistics, where I think there are new ways to understand and how to recognize and generate human and human-like languages using simple programs. Well, it's rather fun, actually, just to sort of pick an area of science or an industry or something, and ask how it can be changed with MKS. Usually one can come up with remarkable foundational changes. Of course, they're usually not trivial to implement. Often they'd be $1 billion of development to turn into reality or something. But thinking about them now shows us sort of where we can imagine going with MKS. Usually one will have to wait until a particular area is ripe, until sort of the ambient technology has reached the right point. It wouldn't have been useful, given calculus, to propose artificial satellites in the 1600s. It has to wait until there's appropriate supporting technology in the world. But once there is, NKS can define where it should be taken. It's kind of interesting. So much of the way we've set up our world to work is, in some fundamental sense, Newtonian. I mean, the trains, we hope, run on time, sort of cycling periodically like Newtonian planets. We try to lay things out in simple repeating patterns and so on. But what NKS shows us is that there's much more that can be done, much more richness in the possibilities that exist. Already we're beginning to see some of that in the ways computers communicate and work and so on, perhaps some aspects of the operation of financial markets. But in the future, one of the things I think will emerge from NKS is that the world will seem much less regular. Instead of trains just coming in a repetitive sequence, we'll be using computation to have little vehicles going around in seemingly quite random ways, but more efficiently achieving the transportation objectives that we have. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how we manage to translate these ideas into social structures as well, and into our organizational and management structures. Already the web and other modern communication technologies have provided new ways to interact, but what does sort of an NKS-informed organizational structure look like? Where, in a sense, we're using non-trivial computation to work out what to do, instead of having a sort of some simple tree-like hierarchical organization. I've been living the NKS paradigm for so long now, and my day job is being a company CEO, so I often think about how these things interact. And sometimes I realize that things we've been doing for ages at our company really are NKS-inspired ideas, but I just didn't notice. And I think there are a few of those in what we do organizationally, but I haven't yet figured out how to articulate it very well. It's sort of interesting how our ambient science informs our way of looking at the world, including the human world. I mean, it's routine to talk about how things in our human world have momentum, or how different forces balance. That's really Newtonian mechanics. It's interesting now, as more of us have a kind of shared experience with NKS, that we can start using NKS ideas as ways to explain and communicate about the world, talking about how such and such a process involves more computation, or about how we are constrained in something by computational irreducibility, or how things must correspond to each other through the principle of computational equivalence. It's a gradual process, but as more and more people understand the framework of NKS, it's going to become a more and more common shared metaphor for the world, which of course helps us to understand the science better too. Somehow this all reminds me of education. I think there's a lot that NKS can contribute there. I mean, historically, mathematics has been an important part of education. It's been taught far more than, in a sense, it should have been, based on how people actually use it in the adult world. It's been taught, but it's been taught part because it defines some important ways of thinking, of being precise and analytical, being able to work out things by reason. But I think NKS provides, in a sense, a more relevant vehicle for some of the same kinds of things. I mean, mathematics has captured the essence of some particular elements of our world that have traditionally been the subject of the exact sciences. And certainly these things have been a shining achievement of our civilization. But now we know from NKS that there's, in a sense, much more out there. There's a lot more mechanisms for things than just what we know from traditional mathematics. And studying NKS gives us a broader view of what's possible and what we need to understand what can happen in things like the natural world. You know, right now in universities everywhere, mathematics gets taught as a sort of service to areas like physics and engineering and economics and so on. Increasingly though, people realize that they should be teaching something about computation as a service too. And often that translates into teaching the specifics of programming and Mathematica or some such, which is great, especially if it actually is Mathematica rather than some lower level language. But in a sense, there's something much more general and fundamental that should be done too. One should be teaching general computational science, And sort of the foundation for that is MKS. MKS is sort of the analog of the pure mathematics of things like calculus that get taught now. Well, over the next few years, I think there'll be more and more formalization of MKS and its role as a sort of fundamental computational science as part of the curriculum and so on. Not just at the college level, but much lower levels too. I mean, it's fun to see young kids now who've been educated in MKS kinds of things and who will say, you know, that looks like a rule 30 or there's a rule 90-like thing over there. It's fun for many reasons. Partly it's defining a different experience of the world where different things can be noticed. Partly it's really opening up the possibility of discovery, because it becomes trivial for a kid to find something out in the computational universe that one can be sure has never been seen before. It makes doing science a much more sort of personal and creative activity, not just something where one has to listen to facts from someone else. It also gives a kind of new computational intuition about things. Doing basic MKS, following the rules of a simple cellular automaton on a piece of paper or something, is in a sense like doing pre-computer science. And doing MKS is sort of a great way to get into actually doing computation. With the new version of Mathematica, we've basically finally broken down the barriers to being able to write programs that do interesting algorithmic, graphical, interactive things very easily. But when one wants to have a program that's simple to write and yet does the most interesting things, well, then MKS is the place to look for that, for sort of the best exercises and experiences in writing programs. So I'm tremendously optimistic about sort of all the things that can be achieved with MKS in the world. But so how do we get there? How do we make sure MKS achieves its potential? Hopefully as quickly as possible, because that way we can all get to see it more quickly. As I said, I'm a devoted student of the history of science, and I'm a great believer in learning from what has happened in the past. So I like to study the sort of great shifts that have happened in scientific thinking in history. There are some invariants. Some things just depend on human nature. I mean, at any given time, there are activities that are well-developed, well-institutionalized, and there are people who spend their careers doing them, and whose worldviews are based on them. And it's inevitable that most of those people don't really want something new coming along. It seems very disquieting, upsetting. Sometimes people assume that science is different. They always hear about progress in science, so they assume people in science are always embracing the new. But that isn't true at all. In fact, as the academic enterprise gets larger and academic careers get longer, I think, if anything, it becomes less and less true. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the world needs consistent work. But for progress to happen, there needs to sort of be a portfolio of things going on that includes new things. Sometimes it isn't trivial to get the new things to happen. I mean, it would be a shame if MKS waited a few more centuries to develop. But it's not trivial to have something new like that actually flourish in the world. It requires consistent, great effort. I mean, I put a decade of work into writing the MKS book and, in a sense, packaging the key ideas and discoveries of MKS in a form where they could have the most impact in the world. I thought pretty hard about the best ways to do things. I mean, the trade-offs between sort of technical descriptions that specialized scientists would recognize and appreciate, but that most people would think were incomprehensible, and trying to sort of reduce everything to a level of clarity and polish where a much broader audience could get involved. I chose the latter path. I wanted to sort of open up the science to as broad an audience as possible. And I have to say that I think that worked really well. I mean, there were a few scientists who initially assumed that anything other people could actually understand couldn't really be telling them anything. But I'm not sure those scientists were ready to learn anything new anyway. And the net result is that there have been a huge range of people from all sorts of different backgrounds who come to MKS and have very interesting and diverse perspectives. People often ask me, so how are things going with MKS? What are people doing with it? People ask me the same thing about Mathematica. Usually I have to say, look, zillions of people buy Mathematica, but they usually never tell us what particularly they're doing with it. We only get to know that through sort of random anecdotal things that happen. And it's the same really with MKS. We know a lot is going on with it, but we certainly don't have a complete map. There are a few things we can do to find out, like we make a bibliography of significant academic work that cites the MKS book. Here's some of the stuff that showed up in the past month. All sorts of different topics, on average a few papers per day. I have to say that as I've looked at these things over the past few years, I see a definite trend. They're getting better and better. the uses of NKS are becoming deeper and clearer, the level of results is going up and up. But these things take time. I mean, a few years back, I did a study of papers that cited early work that I'd done on cellular automata from the early 1980s. Thousands and thousands of papers, but a full 10 years before there was sort of a significant density of what I consider really good and deep uses of what I'd done. Well, with NKS, probably as a result of a much more sort of impactful launch, we're definitely way ahead of that. 5 years out, there's a lot of good, serious stuff being done. Perhaps in a parallel life, I'd read all of it. I certainly find the subject matter very interesting. But as it is, things have expanded way beyond what any one person like me can keep up with. That's why this conference is a great thing. It gives us a sort of snapshot of some of what's being done in NKS. And you'll see me flitting from one talk to another, trying to absorb as much as possible. Well, I'm always someone who likes to plan. Perhaps that's a result of having been a CEO for a couple of decades, or perhaps I'm mixing cause and effect. But anyway, I often think about where I and we should be spending resources to have the greatest positive effect on NKS. I really enjoy actually doing NKS research myself. I mean, exploring the computational universe. I know that just in a few hours I can find something interesting and that's really satisfying. But I think there are other things I need to do now that, in a sense, have more leverage than adding incrementally to the kinds of things I did in the book. I mean, we've just had our annual NKS summer school for the past 3 weeks. It's our fifth one. And I think it's an important way to spread NKS. There are really two things that I personally try to do there. First, I do live experiments. That's something that's become possible with modern mathematical technology. It's become possible to do original science kind of live and in public. Most science these days gets done behind closed doors of offices or labs or whatever. And there's a separate process of reporting the discoveries that get made. But there's something new and rather wonderful that becomes possible with the technology we built with Mathematica, and particularly with the subject matter of NKS. It becomes possible to actually do original science in front of an audience, to start from nothing but an idea, and over the course of an hour or two to actually discover something that's never been discovered before. Of course, there are low points where things seem to be completely off track and everything seems to be completely failing. But I think it's really useful for people to see the actual methodology of making discoveries in NKS, of doing computer experiments that in real time sort of explore the computational universe. We've been thinking about trying to take live experiments kind of global, of having them be watchable over the web. We're still trying to work out how to sort of produce such events. But it's likely they'll be coming before too long, and I think they'll be really valuable, not only as some sort of bizarre new form of reality entertainment, but more importantly, as a way for people to see and experience science and to get involved in actually making discoveries. But anyway, live experiments are one thing I try to do at the summer school, and I'll probably do more globally as a way to spread the methodology of NKS. Another thing I do is to work out projects for people to do. At the summer school, everyone does their own original project, and I should try to help define each of them. It's sort of some combination of what I've learned to do in creative science over the years and what I've learned to do as the CEO of a very active company. Try to sort of define meaningful strategic directions that fit in with what people want and are able to do. And I think that's something that's really a high leverage way for me to contribute to NKS, to help people sort of define directions, to figure out what strategic projects they should be doing and how to solve the problems that they run into. We've tried to concentrate that activity into the summer school, but I think in general that's a place where I feel it's important for me in particular to contribute in moving NKS forward, whether it's figuring out how to attack some problem in science or technology with NKS, or to figure out some real-world kind of businessy strategy that will work to develop an NKS idea. It's a complicated thing trying to move NKS forward. I mean, 25 years ago, I tried to launch the field of complex systems research, kind of a precursor of NKS before I really dived down to sort of the most fundamental issues. With complex systems research, I did the obvious things. I started the first journal for the field, Complex Systems, which I'm happy to say is still very much alive and well. And I started the first research institute that was devoted to the field. After a few years, though, I got impatient. I didn't want to spend my time arguing yet again for why complexity was a field that was worth funding, or how somebody could be a professor studying it without being attached to some specific existing university department. I decided to take things sort of into my own hands in moving the science I was interested in forward. So I created Mathematica as a tool, created our company, Wolfram Research, as an environment to work in. That's all worked out great and allowed me to create NKS and so on. But meanwhile, Complexity did eventually more or less take off. I mean, there are now perhaps a dozen journals, the government funding did eventually come through, and instead of my one institute, there are hundreds of Complexity institutes around the world. I've often actually wondered how much effect my early efforts actually had. I mean, it's amusing to see detailed things that I said in sort of promoting the field 25 years ago repeated as new ideas today. But I honestly don't know just how Complexity, just how it all developed and how much of it did or didn't depend on what I had done. I'm actually planning a project to find out, because we're at a time where computational history is for the first time really possible. I mean, almost all the relevant materials and documents are available on the web, and we can start to sort of systematically study them. I mean, creating, for example, a genealogy of all Complexity institutes, trying to understand the historical connections between different people and things, kind of mining the web for kind of computational history. I'm going to be very interested to see how Complexity research actually evolved. I think it will definitely inform some of the directions that I tried to take with MKS. Actually, I was fairly unhappy with many aspects of what happened with Complexity. And a few years ago, I kind of realized what I see as being the key problem. You see, when I was studying cellular automata and things, I had figured out some kind of core basic science results, which I thought could form the basis for a kind of basic science of Complexity. But when the field developed, it really did so by grafting itself onto lots of existing fields. I mean, there was no core of basic science. It was always Complexity in biology or Complexity in finance or whatever. There were definitely methods that could be shared, but they weren't studied as a basic science. Well, in MKS, we've got a lot further with the whole field of pure MKS, the core basic science of the computational universe. But we have to not confuse pure MKS with the applications of MKS. I mean, it's like with mathematics. There's a very valid and important activity of pure mathematics that has a certain integrity and place, and is distinct from the applications of mathematics. Applied mathematics is kind of a weird field that sits between pure mathematics and some applications, but doesn't have a terribly good identity of its own. Well, with MKS, we need to be doing pure MKS for its own sake, and then there need to be lots of applications of MKS. And most of those applications should be being done within the disciplines and the institutions that have grown up to pursue those particular areas. I mean, people trained in economics should be doing the economics applications. People trained in biology, the biology applications. Of course, one could be trained first in MKS, and then one has a tremendous advantage when one enters one of those other fields. But one needs to sort of separate pure MKS from its applications. Of course, it tends to be the applications that justify more resources being put into a basic pure science. I mean, the applications, though, don't need to be science or technology. They could be things like art or design, whatever. But somehow, to be healthy, the basic science has to be sort of connected to the practical world. It's great to do it for its own aesthetic sake, or even as something for the general public to appreciate. But ultimately, it's going to be healthy only if it has real applications, which certainly won't be a problem in the particular case of MKS. Well, okay, so where should MKS be done? We've done some work at planting MKS at universities. It should happen, and it will happen. But frankly, for me, as someone who's used to building organizations for myself, it's not the right kind of work. Kind of reverse engineering into existing academic structures and politics and so on. It's valuable because universities are a good place to have continued intellectual activity to happen. And at least for now, they're a place where most people go through on their way sort of to the adult world. I have also built my own structure for getting my work done, a company that I'm happy to say has been successful and productive and profitable for 20 years, and where I've managed to collect from around the world an outstanding team. And there are some things with MKS that we as a company can do, particularly when it comes to applications that relate to the kinds of actual products that we build. But for pure MKS research, well, I view our efforts in that direction as a kind of intellectual philanthropy. I mean, our company has been around for a little more than 20 years now, and I'm quite used to planning what we're going to be doing a decade hence. So I think we've ended up with a kind of a longer time horizon than most active organizations ever do. And it's with that kind of long-term view that I think about the development of MKS. Ultimately, though, I'm not sure there's a fundamental justification for us to spend resources developing MKS, but it sort of feels like the right thing to do, and it's something I think is important for the world, so it's something we do. It's kind of a direct, hands-on form of philanthropy. It's more not something where one just sort of gives a university a blob of money and hopes they'll do something useful with it. It's something where we're trying to sort of push the intellectual direction forward ourselves in the best way we can. I think it's going to be worth it. Now, of course, there are also plenty of clear real-world commercial opportunities with MKS, but it's far from trivial to see how to build the right structure to make those happen. They're sort of too far out and they're too diverse. Some of them require a team that's involved with, let's say, computer security, some with drug development, some with financial engineering. To really develop each one requires perhaps $1 million, or perhaps $100 million, perhaps more. What they have in common is using MKS methodology, plucking things out of what we discover in pure MKS in the computational universe. Every year I make a sort of a little more progress in figuring out how to structure something that can really make all of these sort of links to move this kind of thing forward, but I'm still not there. It's still an unsolved problem as far as I'm concerned. I should say, by the way, that as MKS research moves forward, both pure and applied, I can't emphasize enough how important it is to sort of maintain linkages. I mean, of course, there are MKS ideas that can be used without somehow explicitly calling them MKS, but that loses something. It kind of robs the world of the ability to see the cross-connections between what's going on. When we scan the literature to make the NKS bibliography, it's fairly easy to see what's going on when people, you know, have some reference to the NKS book or some such other thing. Perhaps one day there'll be automated text understanding systems that really do well in recognizing that, yes, such and such a paper is NKS-based, even though it didn't explicitly say so. And quite probably the systems that do that will themselves be built with NKS. But for now, we have to look at things like academic citation networks and so on. When it comes to technology, there isn't even anything like that. In devices, thankfully, perhaps, don't come with references and manuals and so on. But the more MKS stays connected, the more it's going to be possible for it to develop well, the more it's going to be easy when somebody says, so, has MKS been used in X? It's going to be easy to actually tell. And the more it's going to be possible for ideas from using MKS in one area to be applied to others. You know, in thinking about developing MKS as a science, I think about lots of things. I'm often talking to my friends who are historians of science and so on. Sometimes they're amused that a person who discovered ideas of computational irreducibility should try and predict and control what will happen in the science they're interested in. But I prefer to think of it all as sort of an effort to out-compute other forces in the world. I ask my friends, the science historians, for precedents and examples, and for a while they can give them, but now they say, look, you know, you've done more planning and more thinking than anyone else who's ever been involved in developing a science. And so you're in a unique position, you're on your own, we'll be fascinated to see what happens. Okay. My staff sometimes give me a hard time labeling different areas of NKS by funny names, like, you know, Wolframics for the basic science of NKS, and Wolframistic for being studied by applied NKS method. My favorite is probably Wolframism for the way, for the kind of NKS way of thinking. But it's clear that ultimately my and our role is just to try to sort of inject a little bit here and there into the development of something much bigger than anything we alone can ever do. One clear contribution we can make with this is with tools. So as I mentioned before, we just finished a 10-year-long effort to reinvent Mathematica that's given us sort of a whole new level of tools to investigate NKS and many other things as well. Two particular things I want to mention in connection with new Mathematica. One is our integration of data, what we call our computable data initiative. One's always been able to ask Mathematica something like the value of a mathematical function. But now, just like the value of a mathematical function, one can ask Mathematica the values of quantities from the world, like the population of France or the melting point of lead. It's a big effort, kind of curating all this data. In some ways, we're just starting. But it's remarkable what one can learn when one has all this data sort of consistently arranged. It becomes possible to do a whole other level of applied NKS and looking for global features of the world using actual data from the world. Well, another thing about the new Mathematica, in fact, kind of the most central thing, is the fact that it's for the first time become easy to not only do static computation, but also dynamic computation, to create sort of an interactive interface as a routine part of one's everyday work. It's really a neat thing to see. I hope you'll get a good chance at this conference if you haven't seen it, used it already. But one of the things it makes possible is, in a sense, a new form of scientific communication. I mean, there's an old adage that, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Well, now we have dynamic demonstrations that are easy to make that might be worth 1,000 pictures each. I mean, in the last 2 months, we've started building a thing we call the Wolfram Demonstrations Project as a place to publish these demonstrations. There are lots and lots about NKS already. Let's take a look here. So exactly 200 MKS demonstrations right now published on the site. But every one of these is sort of an active, interactive demonstration of an idea. Most of them are based on amazingly simple pieces of code that often took not more than many minutes, not more than a few minutes to write. You know, the way that science is communicated actually has not changed all that much in 300 years. We've still got papers and journals and things. I think the interactive demonstrations that we can now build will finally define a new direction, where science can not only be sort of heard, but also experienced. And what's more, all the code for every demonstration is completely open and usually easy to understand. So when people see a piece of science here, they can immediately build on it, taking the code and doing more on the basis of it. Right now, the demonstrations project is growing rapidly as a sort of general repository for communicating ideas. We're planning to let people use it as sort of the infrastructure for something more like academic journals, with all sorts of subject-specific reviewed pieces and so on. So that's another thing that's coming. Well, okay, so in addition to things like software tools, we're thinking about organizational tools as well. One new one that we just added is the idea of research prizes. We just set up our first research prize. On May 14th, as the fifth as a sort of commemoration of the fifth anniversary of the publication of the NKS book. So here it is. The prize is for a very concrete problem. It's not a kind of popularity contest prize. It's a prize about getting a concrete result. It's a nice, pure NKS question. I mean, in the NKS book, with the help of a rather wayward research assistant, I showed that rule 110 is computation universal, which showed, in a sense, that the boundary of computation universality is, in a sense, as low as it could possibly be in cellular automata. And that's an important piece of evidence for things like the principle of computational equivalence. Well, in the book, I had studied Turing machines, too, and I constructed what is currently the simplest known example of a universal Turing machine with two states and five colors. But I wondered just where the boundary of computational universality for Turing machines is. With two states and two colors, I convinced myself that there couldn't be universality. But with two states and three colors, I found a Turing machine which is conceivably universal. I don't know if it is. It'll be interesting either way, because after all these years of sort of talking about universal Turing machines, we'll finally be able to see just sort of how simple the universal ones can be. I'm happy to say that since we put out this prize, I've heard anecdotally quite a lot of evidence of activity on the prize with sort of efforts on both sides of the question. I don't know how long it will take to resolve. I kind of wanted our first prize to be something that isn't sort of too far away, not something that's going to become like the Riemann hypothesis or something. But I'm so far encouraged that research prizes are sort of an interesting way to move research forward. And if so, it will be a sort of a good tool to extend our intellectual philanthropy. Well, I should be starting to wrap up here. I'm looking forward to everything at this conference. I might mention, by the way, that on Sunday we have a special event. My friend Greg Chaitin is turning 60 and we're having a little celebration. As many of you will know, Greg is the originator of algorithmic information theory, among other things. He's contributed to all sorts of fundamental questions about computation and mathematics. I would say that that he and I agree about many important things about the role of computation in areas like mathematics and about the ubiquity of undecidability and so on. I would say that but perhaps sort of the most interesting things are areas where I don't think we agree. You see, a lot of what Greg has done is to show what you can't do with simple programs. And that, for example, simple programs can't produce what he calls algorithmic randomness. Well, of course, all of NKS lives in the world of what simple programs can do. And one of the questions is whether our universe lives in that world, too. Craig has defined a number he calls omega, which is something fundamentally non-computable, not reachable by any sort of finite program. And Greg has often summarized the difference between my views and his as whether the universe is like pi or like omega. I think the universe is computable, like the number pi. He guesses it's more like omega, so fundamentally uncomputable and somehow unknowable. Neither of us, of course, know what's actually true. But I think both of us are keen to find out whichever way it goes. On Sunday, we'll be having a discussion with many of the contributors to a book in honor of Greg, where I'm sure we'll be talking about things like that. Well, let me wrap up here and say that I sort of feel extremely optimistic and energetic about NKS right now. I'm, I'm pleased to see how the MKS community is developing. I think we're sort of just on the cusp of what will probably be the most energetic and exciting phase of the development of MKS in the world, where sort of all the threads begin to come together and MKS begins to be a large sort of coherent force in the world. So thank you very much.